Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, looking to nature for discoveries in food, feed, and fuel. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Well, the planters are rolling in the Midwest. The rains have fallen in the Southwest, and harvest is nearing completion in South America. Yet corn and soybeans managed to rally for the week. We'll try to find out why today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later this half hour, we'll talk with Tom Fritz of the EFG Group. Our panelists today are Clayton Pope of Clayton Pope Commodities out of Champaign, Illinois, and Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. Let's open the day's discussion with this question. We'll start with you, Clayton. Why? Why is it that corn and soybeans rallied Friday at the Chicago Board of Trade?
Well, it was a pretty crazy day, no doubt about that. But I think the fund participation, which was largely inspired by the strength in the outside markets, is really the main explanation. Gold, silver, crude, all the energies were just going crazy, and funds already have an appetite to the long side, and they came in and wanted some more in a big way.
Mike Zuzulo, your assessment?
Yeah, ditto on that with Clayton. It didn't matter whether you were talking to producers and clients from, you know, Van Wert, Hicksville, Ohio, all the way over to central Iowa and into Kansas on Friday, Todd. It seemed like they kept asking the question, how can these markets just keep going up with the planters rolling, and we're probably going to be close to 45% done on Monday on the progress reports, and how can we have such negative bean fundamentals and these markets just keep on going higher? And the only thing we can say is when you look at new 25-year highs in gold and you look at new six-month lows in the dollar, the investment community sees that, and they see the Chinese interest rates going up. They see that as inflationary. They see the durable goods reports. They see, you know, a whole slew of economic reports this week that say this was a very good, hot economy, and maybe it's going to be as good as it was back in 2004, and they associate that with, let's buy more hard assets.
Dale Durkles of AgriVisor Services is with us today as well. Dale, tell me, why is it on Friday that corn and soybeans managed to rally?
You know, I there are two things really that are paramount here as far as the Friday rally. First off, a weekend, got a rain system coming through. So you throw some doubt into the mix. You know, what's planting going to do after this? Secondly, you had all this news about gold come out, and all of a sudden they took off. And I think you just had an environment where nobody really wanted to sell it rather than people wanting to buy it.
We appreciate that. Let's talk a little bit about this on the tech side. Tell me, when you look at the chart, Clayton, what do you see for soybeans after the rally on Friday?
Well, it seems like an odd thing to say when you finish 10 higher and such a surprising day, but when you look at the lead month, July, or the, what they call the top step month, by far the biggest volume in open interest, I thought it was a relatively unimpressive close, not to mention the bean oil really kind of collapsed at the end, too. Actually, it had some lower on the day ticks right in the final minute. So we were a lot closer to the lows than to the highs in the beans, and kind of like Dale hinted at, I think the emotions kind of take a step up on Friday, especially when you got all these crazy things going on with Iran and Iraq and the UN and crude oil and all that. So I think the incentive or the nervousness factor is much bigger on a Friday afternoon than any other day, and I think they probably tended to bring more short covering than you'd normally have. So unless something really strange happens over the weekend, I'd look for things to be heavy coming Monday.
So are you thinking an exhaustion gap in the beans?
I think it's a possibility.
Let me turn that around and talk to you just a little bit, Dale, about this. If you look at the monthly chart for the lead option, an outside up key reversal in the monthly chart, what do you see?
Well, you know, that tells you some positive things for the long term. That doesn't tell you too much about the day-to-day, week-to-week, or maybe even the next couple of months. You know, I'd kind of reinforce what Clayton had to say. You know, the one interesting thing you look at here, May beans today, which are the lead month, got up to 598. back in February and might have even been January, we had the lead month get up to like 603. So we got up to that, couldn't punch on through it. If you also look at corn and beans, both of them are due for short-term cycle lows at the end of May. So I think the kind of thing that unfolded here today, a massive amount of short covering, especially in beans, really kind of emotionally sets a market up to maybe put a top in here and see things work sideways to lower as we go into those cyclic lows at the end of May.
Mike, your tech view of this?
Well, I'll go back to the gold. You know, and it works right in with what Dale and Clayton were saying. We've heard a lot about momentum traders here lately, Todd, and I went back and looked at lead month gold from November of 2005 to February of this year. We ran $120 an ounce higher in gold futures lead month. We've been able to go $120 an ounce higher in the last month since the March 1 low in lead month gold. And so it goes back to the short term could give us a lot of herky-jerky volatile action, but yet you've got a lot of momentum in these outside markets playing out right now. Our best idea right now is to keep it simple. Buy puts to secure floors and corn and beans. Don't oversell the cash. And keep trading known cost, known risk for the next 60 days until you get a trend established in the outside markets that you are indeed topping out.
Taking a look at the numbers from the Chicago Board of Trade, the May contract, by the way, in the bean pit had a high of 598, a low at 570. Settlement price 17.5 cents higher for the week at 587.25. November beans at 620.75. They were up 16.75. What do you do with the marketplace?
You know, I think the big thing is when you look at beans, and I'm kind of in the same camp on corn, you know, I think you really need to, on old crop beans, get yourself paired out to have left here now. What you want to carry on into summer is what I call gambling stocks. You know, I don't think you want to bet a whole lot on it as we head off onto this time. You know, we look at planting, corn pace has gone well. That argues that beans are going to get into ground well. Moisture has been good. So fundamentally, there isn't anything here to really give you any boost or any help. Meanwhile, you still have the heavy old crop stocks to work with in both corn and beans. So I think we probably see things kind of shift sideways to lower. So, you know, you really need to decide what kind of inventory do I want to shoot craps with as we go into the summer months, betting we're going to have more influence from outside markets, we're going to have dry weather, something to really give the market more of a boost. So I think a producer is well off right now to really get stuff sold down old crop. New crop? I'm really kind of a careful seller here yet because I see all these other influences from the outside saying there is something going on here that people can't really understand yet, and it's positive. It's not negative.
So on the soybeans, you're going to hold on to the new crop but get rid of all but what you're willing to gamble with for the old crop soybeans. How about for you, Clayton?
No, I'd agree with that. I would really definitely underscore what Dale called them as being gambling stocks, because I think it is at these levels, given the fundamentals that we're looking at right now, or let's say the supply-demand fundamentals, I think it is an increasingly risky gamble to be, you know, a holder of any significant inventories in old crop. But, yeah, new crop, I couldn't agree more. You got to be cautious, I think, when we're only nearing the midway point in planting of corn and just barely begun in beans. I'm very hesitant to go beyond 25% sales of new crop in the cash market in corn and beans, but I would strongly urge people to get to that point. And I would also strongly urge them to put additional amounts on, but on paper, so that, like Dale said, if something really strange is lurking in the background, whether it's a dollar revaluation, another Plaza Accord type thing or whatever, I think you want to be able to exit something. In cash sales, it's pretty hard to do.
Mike, are you willing to dump and hold on to just gambling stocks?
No, I think we're ready to just go ahead and, you know, let everything go in 05. And in 06, we're still 100% of insured bushels hedged with similar to what Clayton was talking about. We've got the cash HTA for 25 to 30% defended calls against those, and then we've got 30 to 35% also done in the 540 puts. And it's pretty interesting because the November 540 puts, we bought at an average of 18 cents. They're down to a dime. Now we're going to be able to roll up to 580 puts for another dime cost. And, Todd, we'll do that between now and July as often as the market gives us the opportunity to spend another dime to roll 40 cents deeper in the money and still have the cash unsold in the background.
And your assessment of the corn market and what you ought to be doing on the cash side?
Well, the 05 we would have been gone with a long time ago. And I get more and more pessimistic in the clients we talk to. They've got a lot of 05 corn. They've held off. They've done a good job holding off when it comes to the futures rally. They've lost a lot of that potential with the basis widening. So they've got a lot of 05 corn that they're going to let go of here after they get done planting corn and as they work into planting beans. So our mindset is to take advantage of the futures rally at this point.
Our quick assessment of the cash market tells us there were a lot of cell phones ringing this afternoon into the elevators to make 05 corn sales. In fact, what's your view?
I would agree with Mike, and I'm still back in the game. I'm a little bit of a gunslinger at times, I'll admit that, and I'd still keep some gambling stocks around because of some of the things that are going on in the outside markets that I think a lot of people have a difficult time coming to grips with. The one thing I will say, I'm actually, ironically enough, a little bit more willing to hold beans in December than I am corn.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I think beans are undervalued relative to corn at this particular juncture, and at some point that is going to be balanced out again, and people need to recognize that. You know, as much as everybody wants to look at the bean numbers themselves, you look at 550, 60 million carry out, you paint the same thing for new crop and everything. You have to back beans up and you put them in a stocks use ratio. And when you look at the history of beans, whether it's the U.S. or in the world, my contention is we have never had a burdensome supply. We've had burdensome supplies of wheat and corn. We have never had a burdensome supply of beans.
So you're willing to hang on to them, and it doesn't matter really whether the corn comes down or whether the beans rally higher?
Well, I just said I'm more willing to hold beans than I am corn in the summer, in a relative sense. I'd hold some of both, but I'd be more willing to hang on to the beans than the corn.
Corn futures, by the way, finished like this. The May contract at a high of 240, a low at 228 and three quarters. May settlement price up a penny and three quarters at 238 and a quarter. December contract, 271 and three quarters. It finished a penny higher. We'll take a thorough look at the rest of the grains as well. May futures in the wheat, a high of 357 and a quarter this week, a low at 339 and a half. May wheat settled 6.5 cents lower, 346 and a quarter. July futures were off 6 3/4 at 358 and a half. And the May oats at 188 and a quarter finished 14 cents and three quarters higher for the week. Clayton, tell me what you think about this marketplace.
Well, you got to hang on to your hat, no doubt about that. The volatility rules are just so different, or volatility behavior is so different than anything we've seen for years that I think you have to really put some thought into how you want to approach risk management, because it's not like you can just sell 10 or 20,000 bushels of corn and walk away for a while. The worst mistake a hedger or producer can make, I think, is to make himself vulnerable to having to make a decision based strictly on margin considerations. It should be a logical thought process, and I think that would kind of dictate how a person does protect himself, depending on available capital and so forth. So I think, like Mike said earlier, buying puts is obviously the lowest risk way to protect the downside. But as we all know, it's a fairly expensive way, too, because these markets have a habit of breaking, 20 cents, and your puts rallied, 3 or 4 cents or whatever over time. So I think the main lesson we learn here is to kind of diversify, have some price protection in various different approaches, whether it's futures, hedge to arrive, outright forward cash sales, or option strategies, not have all your eggs in one basket, and push a pencil and kind of see, where your breaking point would be before you put the trade on.
Mike, you mentioned that planting probably will progress somewhere between 45 and 55% by the time we get to Monday afternoon, actually Saturday, when they take a full accounting of what's happened in the last week. If you were watching the news this week, you probably caught somewhere along the line that China is still looking at the possibility of becoming an importer. And then they raise their interest rates as well. How does all that work together?
Well, it brings inflation back into the picture for most of the financial markets. And you could see the bonds took a real nice dump, especially the longer-term bonds, because they've needed to get their yields up a little bit. So the best way to characterize that is it's dollar weak, and for at this point it's bond weak, and that means that you go back to buying the gold and buying the crude if you're in the investment group. We had a pretty big drop in the crude oil this week, but it recovered quite a bit at the later part of the week, and it to us kind of correlated with this Chinese rate investment and rate interest rate change.
As you look at the wheat market now, turn your attention there. Most of the action, of course, usually happening in Kansas City with the hard red winter wheat. We didn't track those numbers for the week. But Chicago was lower. I'm assuming the Kansas City was off for the week because of the rainfall in the Great Plains. Although if you look at the numbers, Oklahoma and Texas are shot. I think 70% of that crop in poor to very poor condition. 30% of the crop in Kansas City was in very poor to poor condition last week. How much lower can it really go?
You know, I when you look at wheat, I don't think it's so much of a game right now about how much lower prices can go, what kind of crop it is. I think the psychology of the game, where we've shifted the weather, it looks like in the southern plains, especially if we've had some decent rains when we come back to work on Monday morning, you're basically going to put people on the defensive because they're going to start looking ahead to the fact that we've got a harvest that at some point is starting to get on the horizon for us. And that's especially true in the wheat that everybody in the listening area here is going to be concerned about because it's soft wheat. And, you know, with the acres increase we had a year ago, with the condition of the soft wheat crop in most cases, you know, looking as good as it is, we're going to have a very good soft crop. So, you know, the signal automatically to the milling community is to back away and not get very aggressive about doing anything right now. And by nature, that's just going to leave the wheat market on a weak need basis right now. So I think unless something real surprising comes along out in the Great Plains, whether it's the rains don't happen or whether we get another cold wave out there to scare everybody, I think the wheat market probably starts its erosion down into harvest.
And you're thinking how far? $3.20, $3. I think the low, the range beforehand was, what, $2.80 to about $3.22, $3.25, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I think, you know, the July wheat that closed out Friday at $3.58.5, you know, we can probably go back to somewhere around $3.25, $3.30, something like that. I think it's just going to be a volatile down. And again, I think everything that's going on in the outside markets are going to tend to have some influence here at this point. But right now, you tend to see those as still being somewhat supportive.
Mike, does the erosion in the wheat market scare you at all for the corn?
Well, it does in one way. But I think the other thing, and this is something I wanted to ask the guests later on, is, you know, the wheat just has not picked up the friendliness from the funds in Chicago. Everything I've heard the last 2 months has been negative Chicago wheat, negative Chicago wheat, and I wonder if it's because it's not linked to an ethanol or not linked to biodiesel. So in one way it does, Todd, because it does come back into the feed mix if it breaks, but then by another token, if it's the fund community driving this bus, does it really matter what wheat does here in the next 6 months?
Taking a look at the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange. Live cattle April contract an 80.95 high, low at 78.27 and a half. A settlement price there at 79.20. They were off 2.20 for the week. Feeder cattle finished April contract at $100.52.5, off $1.27.5. Lean hogs May contract $68, the high, low at 65. May lean hogs 67.97.5 were up 2.45. The May bellies at 88.57.5. They were up $9.07.5 from last week. In 2 minutes, we'll talk with Tom Fritz of the EFG Group.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. It was a much cooler week across Illinois, especially through the central part of the state. Aside from some showers early in the week, most of the week was dry, and overall weather conditions were favorable for making progress with spring planting. Temperatures ran 2 to 3 degrees below normal this week across central Illinois, about 1 to 2 degrees below normal in the north, but 3 to 4 degrees above normal in southern Illinois. One reason for the cooler than normal weather this week was due to a couple of mornings with low temperatures in the 30s following the Tuesday weather system. Showers were scattered across Illinois late Monday and Tuesday, temporarily bringing a halt to spring field work. Precipitation amounts were generally light, typically in the 1/10 to 1/4 inch range, with a few higher amounts in central and north central Illinois. Once this weather system moved east, much drier air filtered into the state. A slow-moving weather system approaching Illinois this weekend will bring several days of inclement weather to the region. Cloudy, cool, and rainy weather is likely into the early part of next week. Even then, it appears there won't be much of a break. Late Tuesday and Wednesday will likely be dry, but by Thursday, another cold front will be setting its sights on Illinois, bringing another round of showers and thunderstorms. The threat of rain is likely to linger through next weekend as an upper-level low-pressure system spins over the Midwest. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at WILL.UIUC.edu. Click on AM and then on Agriculture.
I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists today are Clayton Pope of Clayton Pope Commodities out of Champaign, Illinois, Mank Zuzalo of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, and Dale Durkles of AgriVisor Services of Bloomington, Illinois. Our guest on the line is Tom Fritz of the EFG Group. He joins us from his Chicago office. Good afternoon to you, Tom. Thanks for joining us on this Friday afternoon.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
What'd you make of the week's trade?
It's never a dull moment up here. It's the funds are in control, at least when the market goes up, they are. I find it interesting, and I feel bad that I didn't remember it until almost the Friday session was over. An acquaintance of mine sent me a CRB chart almost a month ago to the date, and he said, look how the CRB index rallies the last couple of days of every month. And I find it remarkable that today was no different from what we saw last month.
You know, Tom, that's interesting that you should say that. Do you think that is just at the end of the month, money coming into these index funds, it's starting to have an impact like that?
I think it does. That's because that's really the only explanation I can give to it. And I know earlier this year I had a brief tutorial on how these index funds operate. They do operate at the end of the month, beginning of the month, also right around the quarter marks, too. So, you look at a CRB chart, and sure enough, at the end of the month, they exhibit some pretty decent strength. And, Friday, with the exception of the late close in bean oil and Kansas City wheat, it was like National Commodity Up Day.
Tom, this is a question for you, but I'll open it up to anybody who can answer it. And I think I asked this earlier in the week, and it just got asked actually here while we were listening to the weather segment. How much money can come into the commodity markets from the outside area? Do you know?
I think it's almost limitless with the new index funds that are being created almost monthly. And it seems like every financial advisor out there is saying you need to have commodities in your portfolios.
You know, it's interesting, Tom, that you mentioned that. I was reading a statistic here a couple of weeks ago that somebody had said the aggregate value of stock investments worldwide coupled up with financial investments was somewhere in the ballpark of about $55 trillion, and they've often talked in this whole mix about pension funds maybe putting up to 5% of their portfolio in, and that works out to be about $2.5 trillion that could come in. You know, it's just, and people I know are excited with, we got what in it now? 120, 130, 140 billion?
Correct.
Do you see this money continuing to flow even after we've had these big gains already take place in a number of commodities?
Well, one thing that I'm starting to notice, and I first noticed it in the gold and silver markets this past week, some of the volatility is starting to scare people away. You know, the trends still remain intact, but the volatility is getting to the point where it's going to make some of these managers tend to shy away. You know, it used to be the managers didn't want to come in because our markets didn't have the liquidity. But now they have the liquidity, but now the volatility is getting such that it's going to have some managers, saying, well, maybe I'm not so sure. Maybe I'll let it settle down. We're starting to see exchanges jack up margin requirements. When was the last time the copper margin requirement was $8,000? I think gold is only $3,000. So this will eventually have some of these interested parties taking a step back and saying, not right now.
Well, I would like to make a comment about what we talked about a second ago as far as the little surge in the CRB at the end of the month, the last few days of the month. I would have to think that a large part of that is maybe a little bit of window dressing because, if you're a fund manager and let's say you're a collection of like the top 5 or 10 fund managers in terms of, dollars under asset under management, it's obviously in your vested interest if you're long an awful lot of tangible commodities to kind of, leave a little bit in the fund, so to speak, for the last couple of days to come in there like gangbusters, exactly like they did Monday or Friday morning, and very noisily and aggressively and in a showy manner, buying the beans. I have to think that that's not just a question of some new money coming in all of a sudden, but it's just a kind of a shrewd use of the money that they already have.
I wouldn't disagree with that at all. I can remember years ago my stockbroker calling me, and you know, and in jest I'd say, Dan, it's the end of the month. What's going on? Why all of a sudden do I hear from you at the end of the month? So, no, I have to think that's part of it also. And like any good manager, they want to show good month-end results.
Tom, is it good for the commodity markets to have the index funds playing?
I think they create opportunities for us. Yeah, it's going to bring a lot more volatility into the marketplace, and so you're going to have to do your homework a lot closer. But in the long run, I think it's good.
Mike, do you have a question for Tom?
Yeah, Tom, we've got the electronic open outcry side-by-side starting next month, and I know Todd and Dave have been really working hard to figure more and more out about that and have been on top of that a lot, so I wanted to follow up with somebody that's been up there a really long time. A, how long will it last between the two of them working side-by-side with each other, and is this part of the change? Is this one of the things that will facilitate more fund money coming in? And, you know, Financial Times wrote an article yesterday I read about, and it seemed like they almost thought that the side-by-side and then the eventual electronic was a gimme, and then you'd lose your agricultural, you know, cash-related delivery and so on and so forth, where it became more of a speculative contract in the ag commodities at the Chicago Board of Trade. What's your thoughts?
Number one, it all depends on whether the local will embrace the electronic exchange. We saw in the interest rate sector, you know, the bond market, the 10-year note, it was embraced. Look at live cattle. How many people realize that live cattle have a side-by-side? And it's failed miserably. So I really don't know if the grain market's going to go, but it is to, I believe, to attract more fund money come in here. But without liquidity, they won't use it. So I'm just as curious as everybody else out there to see how the overall trade embraces it.
Do you think they'll stand up beside one another, or do you think someone's going to win and somebody's going to lose?
If they do accept the electronic exchange, will win out. Because I just know from my own personal experience, dealing in deferred months of corn, dealing in deferred months of beans, this time of year when we have big-time volatility, I know there's a number of brokers next that I'd love to ring.
Tom, we appreciate I'm sorry. I really appreciate you being with us on the program. It's kind of an interesting way to end. Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Tom Fritz with the EFG Group joining us from his Chicago office. A final word from our panelist. Mike Zuzula, we'll start with you.
Well, to tie in with what Dale said earlier, the stocks-to-use ratio combined with where you're at value level-wise, we think buying puts is the right way to go for any additional sales for the next 60 days.
And Clayton Pope?
Well, there's no question, I guess, with the power that the funds exert and seems to be increasing, that the rules of the game have kind of changed, and I think a person's approach to risk management has to change as well, too, and requires a little bit more planning and pencil pushing and definite discipline.
Dale Durkholz.
Maalox. Lots of Maalox. Get ready. It's going to be a wild, wicked summer this year, I think.
Thanks much, gentlemen. We appreciate you. That wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. Be sure to visit our website at WILLAG and sign up for our newsletter. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a great weekend.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, looking to nature for discoveries in food, feed, and fuel. ADM, resourceful by nature.